We are recording on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung people, and we acknowledge them as traditional owners. We'd also like to pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Midnight to midnight. Welcome. Screening. Welcome to midnight screening. Welcome to screening. Welcome to midnight screening. I am screaming. I am screaming.
I am screaming.
Welcome to Midnight Screening, where we let you stay up past your bedtime with the movies that you probably shouldn't be watching. I'm Noah. I'm here with Eliza.
Hello.
And Anthony. Welcome back, team. How are we doing?
Good.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. It's been a big few weeks on the pod recently. We've really gone through a lot of the formats that we haven't done for a little while.
Finally, a slot bucket.
We did a slot bucket last week where we finally cleansed our poll of one of its options that has been there for a long time. We talked about the Canadian DTV horror trash piece that is Things. And had a really great chat about its creator.
Yeah, go to Patreon if you want to listen to that and if you want to vote on the next movie.
That's it. We have a new poll up. You've got to go to that to vote. And we had a really great interview with Matt from Fright Fair, which was so lovely.
What a mensch.
Truly. And another lovely person that we subjected to some of our shit with two really bad films.
We sort of haven't watched good things in a minute, is what you're saying.
That is what I'm saying. And speaking of, there was a good thing out in cinemas and it was a bit of an excuse for us to do a format we haven't done for a while and don't do too much, honestly, which is Now Screaming.
I think that's not our fault. I think it's the industry's fault. Now Screaming,
say,
where are the good movies, you know?
This really is finally some good fucking food.
when are we going to get our food?
When will we have some food? It is an episode of
Kitchen Nightmares.
There's an episode of Kitchen Nightmares.
Where everyone's waiting ages for good feed.
It doesn't sound like this. Like when I watch it, I'm like, I've just made the joke for myself worse and worse over the years.
This person is a sad mouse.
It's essentially like a family are out at dinner and it's a restaurant that just like they aren't getting the service out in time. And a little girl's like, when will we have food? And over the years for me, it's become, when will we have some food? I love it.
She's like five or something.
At any time. If there's ever a lulling conversation and I get a bit scared, I feel it.
But yeah, when will we get some food?
It's true.
When will we watch good movies in the cinema?
And we have this a lot with this podcast, I think. I'm proud of how we have stuck to our guns of going, I would rather discover a new film that genuinely could be fucking awesome and send me down a new rabbit hole of discovering amazing new artists and filmmakers and films and subgenres than doing a new release that is like mildly a part of the conversation just to have been a part of the conversation.
Back in January, we could have done Wolfman.
Could have done.
Which was ass.
Oh my God, that was
which
so
was
bad.
Hot, wet ass.
We
could have done The Monkey.
Where did that come from?
I hate that movie. I thought it was so disappointing. It was hot, wet ass.
It was extremely misguided film. We could have done The Monkey.
We could have done The Monkey, which was good. It was like a fun time. But it's like one movie that I really disliked and one movie that I thought was like decent. It's like, I don't want to talk about that. I want to get excited about movies and say, you should go out and see this.
Yeah. And even just like other like cultural phenomenon. Another reason I'm excited for today's episode is like other like cultural phenomenon sort of movies. I've been like, good for them. I don't really care about Wicked. Like, you know, things like that where I'm like, I guess we could talk
I was caught
about-
off guard by thinking Wicked was quite good. I thought it was like a real, it was a cute movie.
I'm not preempting that. I think it's shit. Like
no,
I haven't seen
but
it.
You're like, I don't care.
I would exclusively watch it to be able to talk about it. Mm. But today we are talking about two films that saved Warner Brothers.
We are.
Warner Brothers. So after Jokey Folie à Deux came out.
Did you say Jokey?
Jokey Folie à Deux came out.
That's how they say it in French.
Yeah, exactly. Keep up.
Le Jockey.
Came out. The whole like rumor in Hollywood was that like you know, that classic fucking studio system thing where if one film flops, a bunch of people are about to lose their jobs. Mm. And Warner Brothers was in trouble. Well, they say one good weekend at the box office can change things. And that happened with the two films that we both saw, separately we saw both of these films.
Yeah.
And they are the incredible, real, again, perfect mix of like having a cultural moment, also stunning film, Ryan Coogler's Sinners.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
And the long-awaited, incredible video game adaptation, a Minecraft movie, which we both saw. Which, are you ready to say which one you liked more?
I like Sinners more. What about
maybe then we should talk about Minecraft movie first because...
Chicken jockey.
Which one did you see? Which one of the two did you see first? Because Sinners came out this weekend and Minecraft movie's been having a really good time.
Someone hooked me up with tickets to the preview of a Minecraft movie.
Oh, you got in early.
There were so many blocks. It was crazy. I almost busted a nut how many blocks there were at the screening. It was crazy.
Well, when I saw it, I was shedding a tear the whole time because I was like, if I know one Minecraft head... Yeah. It's Eliza. You grew
one
up.
Minor.
You
the unaccompanied minor.
You looked around the world and it's like all you could see was
I
blocks.
I see everything as blocks.
As little as cubes. Well, with that, and now screaming format where we talk about new releases and, you know, films that are out and whether you should be watching them or not, we're going to kick things off with a discussion of a Minecraft movie.
Yeah.
I thought you were joking. I thought this was like an extended bit and you're not going to talk about the Minecraft movie.
No, we're going to talk about the Minecraft movie.
Fuck yeah.
You know what's crazy
actually?
Is
there ever a point at which we're going to admit that we haven't
roll the now streaming theme. Go, go,
roll
go.
Roll it. One of the two films that saved Warner Brothers. Eliza's basically banging down the door to go, let me introduce a Minecraft movie. Let me introduce a Minecraft movie.
You're off saying you a Minecraft movie, right?
Is that what I said? I think yes. So. Did I say the Minecraft movie?
I was scared
movie?
You said the, but the thing is it's a, which is so tantalizing because you're like, there could be more.
Yeah, they really said it. Do you think, like, do you think there's going to be an extended universe?
A boy can only dream, you know.
A Steve can only dream.
A Steve can only craft. I don't know. I just brought up my computer. I was really tickled today by reading the ABC. They've published two articles to their news website about like just the success of a Minecraft movie. One has the headline, A Minecraft Movie's Viral Chicken Jockey Trend Highlights New Approach for Film Industry. And the other says, Minecraft Mayhem, Chicken Jockey Chaos Reaches Australian Cinemas. It's like, okay, you could have just written one of these, I guess. But the captions on both images of the chicken jockey made me laugh so much. One is captioned, this scene from A Minecraft Movie went viral for sending children into hysterics. Sent children into hysterics. And then the other one is like the most brain rot thing ever. I can't believe an adult had to write this caption.
Children of the corn, but it's just children being shown chicken jockey and getting activated.
This photo, yeah, it's like a sleeper cell. It activates the children. This other caption on the second article says, a chicken jockey is a rare occurrence when a baby zombie rides a chicken like a horse. It's like, what are you talking about? It's a rare occurrence. Like it's something that happens in the real world. Oh my God. Anyway, a Minecraft movie is a nonstop thrill ride. you know, a lot of people, it's like the main thing about it is like they're all about, I'm about this, I'm about that. But this movie, it's more about what isn't said by the characters. Yeah, it's
the space between.
Yeah, the space in between what they're not saying. That's what's powerful about a Minecraft
movie.
It's
about the pixels that are missing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's about the cubes between.
And if you look close enough, you realize it's actually about trauma.
Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of that trauma lacing throughout, particularly
Zoom in, zoom in.
Jason Momoa's character, Garrett the Garbage Man Garrison.
Garrett. You have him. You have Jack Black as Steve. He says, I'm Steve.
He does. He's a former doorknob salesman who has spent years living in the overworld, which is, of course, what we call
our human realm. But we don't know.
Wait, is the overworld the... anyway. No. The overworld is the Minecraft land.
Okay, that's the block world. He's been living there.
You have a bit of a lapse of brain cubes
I've
there.
I've been in the not overworld for too long, I think. Methinks. But that's the thing. You don't have to methinks in this movie.
Yeah.
I think everyone's always wanking on about you should watch this movie. It's like freaking, it has subtitles. It's black and white. It's in another language. Mm. I think sometimes you need a movie where you can just turn your brain off. You can just leave your brain at the door. You can just eat some popcorn. Just have a good time. Like just have fun and let people enjoy things and have fun.
Let people enjoy things and have fun. And like, is there anything better than the cinematic, like the united cinematic experience of... The chicken jockey. When that happened, it was so funny. People were laughing for like an hour. I thought it was laughter, but like there was 30 minutes of like one person was, they were like a bit hurt. They got injured from it.
Yeah.
Like
their friends actually flung them at the screen.
Someone threw their phone in the sky and it like hit them on the head. They were bleeding. But like it sounded like laughter. So I was fucking laughing the whole time. It was great.
The thing that so good. Complicated a Minecraft movie for me was... I was
the
too line, excited.
The dialogue. Why are they talking?
Yeah,
shut up, buddy.
Craft.
just craft.
No, it was that I kept getting excited because I thought the chicken jockey moment was about to happen. And so when Steve was on screen, I would like get so excited. I'd stand up and start to yell. And after the first couple times that happened, like my friends that I was watching the movie with began to get really upset with me.
Mm.
And so was sort of a boy who cried chicken jockey situation where when the chicken jockey, when the baby zombie that it's a rare occurrence when a baby zombie rides a chicken jockey, rides a chicken like a horse. It sort of was a bit diminished for me because I'd already like
anticipated.
I'd been
it
edging
so much.
Myself so much that But I think I'll go see it again and that won't be a problem.
Good
I'll know
for
when
me
he says it.
Was my cinematic experience was like everyone was a bit the same. You could sort of feel that united like tension in the
everyone
air.
Everyone was ready.
But the way that we were all sort of like microdosing what was about to happen was we all just had TikTok up. Like everyone, you could look, everyone was watching the chicken jockey moment on their phone
before it
came up. So you were ready to go.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Like I didn't realize that you had such a pickaxe to grind with the experience of this movie.
We do. We truly do.
You know, it was my own fault. It was just because I was excited.
But that's the best part. We'd crafted such a big idea of what it was going to be. Minecraft is such a big idea in our mind of what the experience was going to be. Mind. But it really lived up to it. You know, it really like it
was
lived up
to that. It was a nonstop thrill ride.
What did you think?
Two thumbs up.
Of of Jennifer Coolidge's role.
I thought it was great. Okay, I actually know about this a little bit. So she's the nasty school principal. She's a nasty vice principal and her name is Darlene or something, I think.
It's Marlene,
Marlene, okay. And she hits a villager from Minecraft with her car and then she ends up going on a date.
Nitwit.
Okay, yeah.
Voiced by Matt Berry.
Oh, really?
Who's that?
Matt Berry, he's great. He's very... Oh,
IT
What We
crowd.
Do in the Shadows
yeah,
and
that
shit
guy.
Like that. Yeah, he has a great voice. I sort of... I can't talk more because I still make it obvious that I haven't seen the movie. But I mean,
what?
Huh? Sorry, my brain's a little fuzzy from too much Minecraft watching. And then she falls in love with him and goes on a date, and she's like a real standout. She's so funny.
Well, the only thing that annoyed me more than that. Like, I love that romance so much, but the whole time I was watching the screen, I was just in love with the character of General Chungus. Oh. Who was a high-ranking piglin in Malgosh's army. And I liked watching the top ranks of Malgosh's army up close. I was like, that's the sort of thing from playing Minecraft for years and years that I was like, I've never gotten to
see.
You know. Piglish clan.
If you're a gamer girl or a gamer boy or a gamer person of any gender expression
or
identity, any creed, doesn't matter what race you are. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter if you're dead or alive. If
Malgosh's,
you watch Minecraft, you'll go,
That is the Malgosh's army tribe. That's how Malgosh
does.
He's
a piglin.
I just had hoped, like, whenever I would play the game and I would see General Chungus rendered in cubes, I dreamed of, like, love for him. And I was sad that he didn't get it. But that's okay because it was such a nonstop thrill ride that I guess it's fine.
My knuckles were white. You're gripping on the edge of your seat and your knuckles are white, grabbing the seat, grabbing the fabric of the seat, and your knuckles were white when you looked down at your knuckles.
They were white knuckled. Yeah. I was heated
up. And you know
up.
What? It was also like, it was like the Minecraft video game that the movie's based on. It's like the setting.
Oh, yeah, in what way?
Okay. It's like the setting of the game where it's all cubes. It's like it was a character in the movie, you know? You have the characters, like you have Garrett. Like,
yeah.
You have Marlene. You have Dalgosh.
You have Natalie.
You have Nitwit, you have Natalie.
Dawn.
But it's almost like the setting was so potent and so like beautifully realized that it was like a character in its own right.
That's crazy. Woody Allen should set a film in the Minecraft world.
Yeah.
Kind of like New York.
I would forgive him, films. I think, if he made a Minecraft movie.
If he could just explain himself through cubes, I would understand.
Yeah.
I think that's
it's a universal language.
It is a universal language. It's the melting pot, the melting cube.
The blockchain.
The blockchain
that unites us all. What about the post credit scene?
Yeah.
Describe it to us in detail.
Oh, when he finally makes his jetpack?
Yes. There's oh, that's interesting. Okay.
What?
No. I, of course, just now that I'm recalling it from my brain.
Yeah, you just remembered.
I remembered that it's that we hear the voice of Alex, who is a woman living in Steve's house, and she's voiced by Kate McKinnon. There you go. There you go. So I think that personally they're setting up another Minecraft movie.
Yeah.
I don't want to knock on wood.
Knock on wood, knock, knock. Can I come into the Minecraft
Let
land?
Me in.
Let me into the overworld right now.
But I think we could see Kate McKinnon and Steve teaming up to craft more things in the Minecraft movie next.
Sounds like Jumanji is trapped in there.
But it's nothing like that because Jumanji wasn't brave enough to do what to the Minecraft jockey. Movie did, to have a chicken jockey.
Before we move on to Sinners, like, have you actually seen it? Have you seen Minecraft movie?
Yeah, of course I've seen the Minecraft movie.
Okay.
What was your favorite scene in the Minecraft movie? And you can't say chicken jockey.
Oh, no, I'm still talking about the end when he finally makes his jetpack. Like, that's definitely the scene of the movie
good.
That really sticks out in my mind as the part that I know a thing about and so therefore all that right. I remember
the
it.
The jetpack
that
bit.
That sounds really real.
Where he sings a song?
Because
like, there are songs.
Metaphorically, the whole thing is a
it's
song.
Like, it's basically like, a musical. Because the movie. Basically a political thriller.
The movie is singing your heart song when you watch it. It's true.
This is my heart song and I'm going to play it. You know that song?
Is that that song? I was thinking, this is my fight song.
And you know what we'll actually link below is Mining Diamonds. The kids' song where he sings Take On Me by Aha, but it's about Minecraft. Mine Diamonds.
Have you heard the one that's is it Diamonds by Rihanna? I'm not sure. Now's probably a
like
good
a
time
diamond.
To mention that this is why I violently cried for the entire runtime of a Minecraft movie.
What?
Is because I used to, as employment, so like I would do this job and then they would give me money with which to live and buy food. I was a kids' party entertainer.
At kids' birthday parties.
And it was like at a place where you could go and and then we would do the parties in the venue, by which I mean like we didn't go to people's houses to do the party. Because if we did, I wouldn't have offered this option. But one of the things you could do was Minecraft.
Minecraft
and that was my least favorite theme because I would have to play Steve. And they would put a cardboard box on
my
head.
You originated the role of Steve?
Yeah.
That Jack Black then did with
so
such
I
a
was really, really extremely confused.
Extremely
confused at first because Jack Black was just living. He didn't have a box on his head at all.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what the fuck was going on because I was like, that's not my Steve. Where's the box on his head?
Wow.
Why are kids not asking why his head's slipping forward and backwards and to the side? Because it's a box sitting on top of a head.
Oh.
So that was very much an experience where I got to see that there was another way in which I could have conducted my business or in which
what
my employers
like
could have conducted my business.
Steve? What was the parties like? What songs do they
A lot of
do?
Responsibility, a lot of weight. You had to listen to Minecraft parody songs, but they were better produced than just kids screaming over ones on the internet.
Was there the one that was like Viva La Vida, but it's like another creeper will come.
It was that. It was that exactly.
Wow.
if I can take it to a mildly sincere place with the Minecraft movie, it'll help us transition into our very genuine review of a really great film. But yeah. with this film that we both loved, a Minecraft movie, mm-hmm. some cynical movie buff slob,
some pretentious snobs
out there
yeah.
might say that this is a really heartless piece of
yeah.
corporate filmmaking intended to indulge in an audience's inability to challenge themselves or to engage culturally mm. with learning anything new. But very genuinely, is there not another argument that says, like,
it's that, selling tickets
in the
at least?
Well, yeah, like it's saving the industry. And that thing, yeah. where, like, you know, the industry would be dead if Marvel hadn't had the last like 20 years of yeah. whatever. But also, like, in the 80s and 90s, there were like Care Bears movies, there were Power Rangers movies. They've always been movies of toys and shit. Like, is it just, I guess, from the perspective of those snobs, is it just that a film could, like in this moment where they feel it feels like films with this sort of intention take up so much space that is so egregious? I personally feel like it's the way in which like it indulges that sort of like, you know, that theme park thing of that a film is made to be like screamed at and with popcorn piffed at the screen.
Mm.
Like that thing scares me in terms of like this, that is already a thing that Marvel films had done, is create the idea that like a film's success, its merit as a successful film is equal to the degree to which like an entire audience hoots and hollers at it, which mm. is like the most like monkey brain way of grading the success of something is like whether it makes me like scream yeah. approvingly at it, that I just think like is a bit of a net negative. But it also like kids grew up with Minecraft, like all of those properties are things that like, you know, Star Wars and superhero shit is stuff that like current generations have been told to care about, but they didn't actually grow up with like generations, like five generations ago grew up with. And I guess Minecraft is like the first case of a thing breaking through that does sort of belong to those kids watching it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's interesting that, wow, I just feel a joy like sapping out of me now that we're not pretending to have seen a Minecraft movie anymore.
No, I'm talking from the perspective of someone who would
say those
things.
You're just playing devil's advocate.
I'm playing devil's advocate, okay, yeah, because right. it's hard to, you know, got to stretch yourself to say something critical about a perfect movie.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's interesting that Jack Black is sort of, I guess, the main character, arguably, of a Minecraft movie as Steve. And he's also Bowser in Mario Brothers movie.
Mm.
So it's like the two big, really financially successful video game movies, all CGI pretty much. Like Jack Black, to me, like the idea of selling out is not a thing anymore. Like it's not shameful to be a sellout. And mm. I think he is one person that like our generation, like we're not, you're, I don't know, cuspy Gen Z, millennial or whatever. Mm. He's like one of the only people where I feel like there is a vibe of betrayal of being like, you fucking sold out because you were
deeply habit of him. Yeah.
yeah. It's like now you're only in stuff for kids. And like you playing Steve with a box on your head, he's a children's birthday party entertainer clown where he's just like, I'm doing this funny thing for you. It's going to entertain you. There's mm. no sort of deeper merit or anything behind it. And it's like, I can't quite put my finger on why that does piss me off and make me sad. It's when, like, what's wrong with a clown?
Sorry, know. When was Jack Black not doing movies that were predominantly for kids?
Well, like School of Rock, I don't know. That has like adult appeal.
Even his okay. early 2000s, like Tropic Thunder or like the early comedies and stuff.
Yeah, Shallow Hal, I don't know.
I do think he has always been a person that was going to do these things. I actually think it's because we are more like cynical people. Not necessarily cynicism, but what I mean is he's very much of that opinion of like, I'm all about extreme, excessive, like positivity, like
yeah.
looking on the best of everything, and any version of looking at a thing that makes people happy and not giving it to them is like, why would you? It's exactly the thing we're talking about here is like, let people enjoy things.
Yeah.
Instead of going like, is there a degree to which if you just gave everybody everything they think they want yeah. all the time, then that would be a net negative for the world.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it changes who he's been. I think it's sort of always who he's been, but it is fucking disappointing.
Maybe the turning point was literally just him being like, don't make jokes about hurting Donald Trump.
I hate that thing where I'm like,
what about
like,
stick it to the man?
You're literally like a, your
such
career
a
is being like,
neo-lib thing to say.
I'm a fan. Like I'm this rock appreciator.
Yeah, I'm an underdog.
Like a lover of rock and the spirit of rock. And then to be like, let's
come on now, guys.
Let's entirely exist as the least radical, most agreeable possible like idea of like put a stamp of Jack Black on something and make everyone be like, oh, we love him. Like
he's so wholesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, okay. Let's never fucking talk about a Minecraft movie ever again.
I'm sorry.
Let's move. But I appreciate it as a foil to Sinners, where Sinners is very, very original. It is, people are really worrying about it, that is it not going to be a commercial success? It's critically, it's hugely popular. Audiences love it. A Minecraft movie commercially is hugely successful. Critics hated it. Audiences, like, I think they're just like, sweet, that kept my kid distracted for a couple hours.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm really keen to, in light of all this, like, Sinners is in an extremely flattering position.
Yeah, literally. Not that it matters, the box office side of things. Obviously, we're just talking about how interesting it is that this is a case of an industry where like every time there's a film that is a mega hit or a mega flop, it really feels like the collateral of that could be huge. That it is interesting to think about a Minecraft movie as I saw this take on it that sort of said like you can see them being like, a Minecraft movie is what buys us one battle after another and Sinners. The idea of being like, we will make one for them so that we get two for us.
You mean Warner Brothers is saying that? Who? The directors or the actors or
something? Oh, no, like as in I saw, I can't remember where I saw it, but like I saw on my feed, like another film podcast, I think, saying that like it feels like the sort of thing where one of the only studios that's willing to like risk money for a like impressive, like possibly really exciting project,
but arty,
like arty
thing.
Sort of project is Warner Brothers, and that this year it feels like a Minecraft movie is sort of like that has paid their ticket to be able to take the risk of PTAs one battle after another and
the Ryan movie Coogler's we're about to talk about right now,
and it really fucking paid off, which is so exciting.
Yeah, are you keen to see this movie, Anthony?
Again?
Wait, you saw it? Oh, Sinners.
I thought you were talking about the Minecraft.
No. I mean, that goes without saying.
They don't let you into the theater anymore for a Minecraft movie.
For the shit
I keep being like, stop trying to stifle creativity. Let me in.
I need inspiration. Like, I need to find inspiration.
Go on, look at my crystal. yeah, for sure. Yeah, maybe.
It's great.
I think the music, you probably, if you know anything about the movie, or if you, the thing that you might appreciate about it the most is its insane musicality and friend of the show, Jamie Tran, posted an Instagram story saying like, oh, this is the best musical of the past decade or something like that. And I was like, I don't know if I quite believe her. It probably just has like a cool music bit. But it pretty much is as close to a musical as possible without being like a musical with a book and like songs every 10 minutes.
It's
it has the same power as like a really good stage musical.
Oh, absolutely. And its strength is just this like deep, earnest, beating heart that hops between genres of like there is...
It's a vampire movie.
A vampire movie. There's
it's
a like
action movie towards the end.
Yeah, like a siege thriller sort of Assault on Precinct 13-esque film. There's like a Jim Crow...
It's a period movie.
Sort of period like, like deep South racism drama.
Sprinkled in there. I mean, yeah, it's a musical. We should say that again. Sprinkled in there. I wouldn't say they're really their own genre, but it, like, it's a really sexy movie.
My
it has
God,
like
it's
pretty
so horny.
Explicit sex. And like in the dialogue for like a, this is the thing people, arty, pretentious letterbox freaks whinge about saying we want more sex in movies. This is like exactly what they're asking for, just for like Hailee Steinfeld to use the word coos and to see her like spit in a guy's mouth and stuff and to see characters like grab each other's junk. You're like, oh yeah, like movies can, this is legal. You're allowed to do this.
It's like a deeply pro eating pussy movie with like multiple really genuinely.
They talk about it so much. And there's a character who like after she gets her pussy ate really well, she like, it, the next thing it cuts to her is like her singing on stage and being like, it's crazy.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah. What's Sinners about?
Sinners is about two brothers, both played by Michael B. Jordan, Smoke and Stack. Stack is like the charming lady killer one.
Like hustler.
Yeah,
sort of
more of a hustler. He's more charming. He gets on with people. He's better social skills. And Smoke is sort of the more broody, maybe a bit more brutal, like unforgiving kind of one.
Ex-soldier, right?
I think they're both ex-soldiers, which confused me a little. Like it was sort of only like remembered or revealed at the end of the movie in a sequence that I kind of didn't think worked that much. But they have been in Chicago, allegedly working with Al Capone, and now they've come back to the South, the Jim Crow era South. Most of the people they grew up with are sharecroppers. They're picking cotton. They, with their ill-gotten gains from being gangsters, they set up a gin juke joint kind of in the middle of nowhere near these cotton fields. And the movie only takes place over like a day and a night pretty much, which is awesome. Like From Dusk Till Dawn, which is sort of an influence, I guess.
It feels like the main reference point structurally, I guess, which we'll talk about.
Yeah. And it shows the first chunk of the movie is them sort of getting the band back together. They get their cousin involved, who is sort of like a Robert Johnson, like nascent blues legend, who's amazing guitar player and blues singer. And they pretty quickly scoop him up and like, you're going to play and like help us out with the juke joint. They get Delroy Lindo, who's like Delta Slim, like a harmonica busker, local legend guy, who's kind of a booze hound or whatever. They convince him to join in. This guy, Cornbread, to be the bouncer. And while they're bumming around town, each of the brothers bumps into their kind of exes or lost loves, which for Stack, the like slick kind of one, is Hailee Steinfeld. And he like spurned her and broke her heart. She's like, I've been waiting for you for all these years. And she's really mad at him.
And has this like, that she's like racially ambiguous, like this storyline.
Yeah, she says that she's an eighth black, like her grandma's mom was black or whatever, which in IRL, Hailee Steinfeld, the actress, has said that's also her heritage or whatever. So she has like a sort of funny relationship with this family where she's sort of like invited to the cookout. She's part of the family. But as the movie goes on, that's sort of complicated a bit. And then Smoke has his ex, Annie, who the actress didn't, I was really surprised that the actress didn't get like second billing.
Yeah, big part of
the movie. Who plays Annie. Wunmi Mosaku, like she's sort of like one of the more main characters to me. And she was quite far down the cast list, which was funny.
She was beautiful. Oh, the,
she was
this
great.
Whole
she's sort of like a
amazing.
Santeria. Like she has all this kind of like witchy knowledge. And
I had this for the blues, the young blues musician boy as well though. Like he also, I was like, it's very much the idea of like you are seeing the world through the eyes of like an innocent discovering the depths of, you know, the pain that the community experiences and stuff. But yeah, it's a film that is going for that ensemble thriller feeling by the end. And it's so earned because everyone, you understand
really
them all
like,
so deeply.
I really cared
and
about the characters. I really cared about the Chinese couple that runs like a grocery in town or whatever. And it's like they're Chinese migrants with like real thick Southern accents.
Yeah.
And again, they didn't do that much. Like they, Coogler just kind of stuck with them for a while in some shots where it shows them like walking across the street and it was enough to be like, wow, I've never seen someone like you in a movie. I really like you. I hope you don't die.
It's a very like, again, the bar is in hell, but it really is that thing where you're like, I saw today a post from the cultural consultant on the movie who had like produced a documentary about Asian Americans being the only people who like post slavery were going to step up to work convenience stores and just jobs like that in predominantly black areas. And just that thing of being like, we will talk about the deep, deep, deep ways in which this film and in its production as like, you know, yeah, the production of the movie is like a super beautiful, powerful statement on like a black creator inside of a system making something that speaks to like different cultures.
But yeah,
like,
that's really welcoming and is about and is the American ideal of the melting pot or whatever.
Yeah, but like it, just a detail like that is such a case of like, again, you should go find the post from this creative consultant. Like she literally says it in the thing of just being like, it would be so easy to have just made that role a black person or a white person, and yeah, you literally wouldn't think badly of it.
But
brain
you really
would just
notice
accept it.
That it's
you really
an Asian
are like,
person.
Oh, that fills in the world in a way where I go home and I'm like, that's interesting. Like, what?
Yeah,
is the real world story of that how someone of that heritage ends up there?
Yeah,
like,
so
it's such a nice filled in bit of world building.
Yeah,
you know?
The period aspect of it does a lot of heavy lifting. Like, the whole central thing of building to the big opening night at the Duke Joint. It's taking place during Prohibition, so even before we get to vampires and action and shit, you're like, oh, there's basic stakes here of like they're doing this naughty, illicit thing and you really want them to pull it off. You want them to get the band back together, kind of Blues Brothers, I don't know.
Yeah.
And the whole middle of the film is these crazy long takes around the joint.
If someone says the shot, like, oh, that one shot, like, yeah, this is the shot in Sinners they're talking
this
about.
This is
it's
the
like
moment.
A moment that we'll talk about literally forever. Like, we'll talk about the degree to which with this film you think it is worthy of the like moment it's having. If
yeah,
it really
it's having,
is.
It's getting overwhelming praise. Like no one doesn't like this movie.
I love it, but like the moment of the film that we will talk about forever that I'm like, that absolutely deserves the praise is this tracking shot in the middle of the movie.
So it's a shot of the night's going pretty well. The brothers are starting to realize that a lot of their community can't pay for their drinks with money. They're paying for them with like sharecropper wooden tokens. And so even though it looks like a thriving success, they're sort of bickering about the financials in the back room or whatever. Meanwhile, their cousin, Sammy?
Yeah. Sammy, little Sammy.
Little Sammy is taken to the stage for the first time and sings like a blues song dedicated to his dad about like, I'm sorry, please forgive me, father. I got to play the blues. I got to be a blues man.
I
got to
play blues.
And when this whole bit started, I was like, is this going to be corny as fuck? And am I going to feel distance from it?
I thought that at first too. And
because
then,
he's playing the song. Everyone in the audience loves it and is humming along to it.
And we should just quickly say, sorry, that the film has introduced this idea. Like the film opens before the title
card.
Yeah,
with sort of like images or animated etchings or something.
Yeah, that sort of builds this folklore idea that like throughout the history of the world, there have been musicians and storytellers from different cultures whose like their music is a way of like connecting through time and space. This idea that like there is a magical connective power to the great musicians of any time. So again, this is a film that like very early on, everything you were hearing about it was like, this is a film that feels more about music
than vampires.
And sorry, continue. Yeah. So
no,
he starts playing.
He starts playing and humming. And he sounds great. And like a kind of like George Clinton or like funk guitarist comes up next to him with like modern or like 70s or 80s kind of get up on and like an electric guitar and starts playing with him. And so you're like, ooh, okay, there's like some kind of remix thing going on. And then it's like this long tracking thing of especially like African American music traditions. Like there's b-boys and like DJs and funk and there's like some girls twerking in the kitchen. And but then also like you just see like all these figures from the future of music manifesting in this 1930s environment. And then it also has figures from history, I guess, like different African nations, their traditional dress and their traditional dances. And also like Chinese performers with like really elaborate face paint on and stuff, like all dancing together. And it could be lame. It could be like we are the world shit. Yeah. We're like, oh my God, we're all the same. Wow. Mm. But instead, it just really fucking worked.
It's extremely
and it was really
sweepingly
exciting.
Beautiful.
The idea that and no one is reacting to each other. It's almost like it reminds me so like lame, but it reminds me of in A Sixth Sense where he says like people don't even know they're dead. It's like death like is overcome by everyone's talent and joy and everyone's just dancing. It's like all these ghosts dancing together and they don't see each other.
It's beautiful. It's so, and
it feels really special.
And I think the film's greatest strength is, again, that big beating heart at the core of all of its like really sort of poppy, like accessible Hollywood filmmaking ideals. And I thought that this whole, like this shot even just like carried us really well into the introduction of the vampires and the way in which Coogler wants to play with the mythology of a very familiar thing like a vampire.
Yeah.
Which you always think is done, but like it's just...
They never die. That's the thing about vampires.
That's it. Like literally you always think that there's no more fresh takes on it you can do. And at first the thing I was having with this was sort of the like, especially for a horror podcast lore, like the irony that it builds the, like, again, it's sort of being very similar to From Dusk Till Dawn in that what you do is set up an hour and a bit of a separate film. Mm. And then the third act exclusively is like, surprise,
bloodshed.
It's a vampire movie, like vampires only arriving at the end. And this film...
There's the vampire attack about like half an hour in, right? Or like 40 minutes in.
Yeah, which is... such a great introduction as well.
It's cool,
but just the first hour, it builds these characters and their relationships well.
Sorry.
I sort of felt like the vampires was going to feel like it
was
cut into
on.
The film in a way that didn't feel seamless.
Mm.
But the way in which what the vampire mythology is in this is similar to that idea of the preacher boy, that Sammy, the guitarist, connecting to his like ancestors and these all these different cultures.
The vampires just want that too. And in fact, they're drawn to this big group of people and their blood because of what Sammy conjures or
whatever. The vampire allegory in this, like I loved that initially I struggled with it because what it is kind of, and it does that thing, a good, and you know that that Ryan Coogler famously did with Killmonger in the Black Panther films.
He made the villain too convincing.
I feel convinced. Like they're selling this idea of like a homogenized, unified.
Especially for othered groups. Like the vampires are Irish and they're real sore about that. There are Choctaw people who pretty quickly figure out the situation and are like, you white people have a good day. We're not going to help you. Forget about it. Don't worry. Take care of yourselves. And then for these Irish settlers or whatever to offer to this big partying group of black people, like, well, we can just start our own society. We don't need to sharecrop and be indentured servants and whatever else for the white society that's brought us all here. It's fucking alluring. You're
really
like,
alluring
why don't
idea.
They do that?
And it just creates this really dark dynamic around the idea of like, what are the two threats at the door? One of them is the natural world, the fucking Ku Klux Klan, that is like, again, we've been spoiling this film.
Human
but
evil.
Like, that is a human reality of your life here, and the allure of what to me is like the idea of death, which is either literally dying, the vampires, or the vampires as this idea that your existence can be one that exists outside of
the individual, kind of gets erased,
your culture outside of your individuality, and the idea that's like, you can let go of the concept of yourself as black or as Asian or anything. You can just be one of the winning race.
Yeah.
And like that is
just
dark.
The one race. But like the way they show it is so sinister and appealing because, okay, we're jumping ahead a little bit. I kind of don't want to spoil the whole movie, but it's like.
Oh, we're going to, right? I feel like we always do. You keep out what you want to keep out.
I think let's be a little vague.
You keep out what you want to keep out.
At some point, everyone in the big party at the Duke joint gets kicked out and it's just our main guys inside. And they look out to see that most everybody has been infected by the vampires and has these awesome glowy eyes. And they're all doing an Irish jig. And the main vampire, Jack O'Connell, is doing the Lord of the Dance, flicking his legs around. And everyone else, including characters that we have known and who have never stepped foot in Ireland or would have no reason to know any of these songs, are all clapping and stomping and dancing along, and they know all the words to the Irish ballad. And so it's like, oh, okay, you kind of have, it's like the sci-fi idea of like a singularity. Like suddenly everyone has the same heritage and memories, and that looks like a lot of fun. They show it to look like a fucking blast.
Yeah.
But that's really dark. The and idea that all of your song? Personal memories and shit from your family just gets added to the melting pot. It's melting pot as sort of a dark end. But it's also one of my problems with the film, that I wish the characters had argued more about this, about why wouldn't they just want to be part of it.
It transitions from it. It introduces it like one of the problems initially, which is we have characters in, under siege, trapped in a place. Like, how are we going to get to the mechanics of an action film? Of like, are we going to kill them? Are we going to run away? What's the plan? It feels sort of clunky, but it comes from a really great idea, which is you can't let a vampire inside unless you invite them in. And it's so fucking amazing, the idea of like placing this like
all of our cultural heroes inside, all the baddies outside trying to get in.
And this like real cultural allegory of literally being like, you can take a step and join the idea we represent, or stay in here and mull over the fact that you're about to die.
Yeah.
Because what is beautiful about the whole shack and like the idea that it reflects is that, like, you know, there's lines towards the end of the movie between vampires and humans of being like, before the sun went down, before the vampires, before all of that.
Yeah, that was the best night of my life.
That was the best night of your life, right? And it's just the idea that like,
it's like the only safe space, the only free space that they've ever had.
Like, we lived inside a dream version of life for one night. And the idea that like, to either subscribe yourself to the vampires or to die by the Ku Klux Klan and stay in the natural world and deal with that, is to miss that like, the only way that the world really naturally should be is that that shack should have gone on forever, you know? But it does kind of struggle to the way in which it ends up being like, the shack is open, we let the vampires in. Is
like a character makes a big mistake or like gets caught up in their emotions.
A character makes a big mistake and it doesn't really come from our lead characters making choices. I would have liked if it came from our characters actively being shown not making choices. Like I would have found that interesting. But it just sort of feels like what initially is a standoff dribbles into like a lack of decision on the film's part. You know what I mean?
I think the way we've been talking about the plot of the movie, that it dribbles into this crazy action ending, which is very cool. And people that you really like all die really quickly. You're
This
is so sad. I think by the end of it, the ending is quite strange and there's sort of like an extended action little coda that didn't work for me. And I think by the end, it made me think there was too much start. There was too much introducing and beginning. And if they were going to go to that place of like the hectic action-y climax with like full on vampire from Dusk Till Dawn stuff, I wish it had got there a little earlier.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've seen in interviews, Coogler talk to his DP, Autumn, Gerald Arkapow, about that a huge visual, like the main visual reference for the film was The Thing, which makes sense for the claustrophobic vibes and stuff. And
who's allowed in, who's kept out.
Yeah. And it has a scene that is a direct, you know, take from the blood test scene in The Thing.
Yeah. Well, they all have to chew garlic because a vampire will. I like that they were really old school vampires like that. Like they don't like garlic and they have to be invited in.
And that we just know what event, like that the film's like, you know, the they're characters like, yep, like it's a vampire. Like I like that about it.
Yeah.
But I did think for a film that knew the baseline clever thing to do with an ensemble, like, you know, pot boiler, like claustrophobic film is to make sure we know who these people are and how they all have different dynamics with each other, that it was weird that it seemed to feel overwhelmed by that once it could be relishing in it.
Yeah, you wanted to see conflict where some of them are like, my loved one is now a vampire, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And everyone else say, why? And argue more.
And like some deaths
land. There sort of wasn't time for it.
And some slip away.
Yeah.
Just to quickly mention the coda you said, it is weird the way it happens.
Yeah,
it
so there's an extra blast of action. Can I like, okay, it sort of like involves the human evil that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Where it's like after all the supernatural shit, awful white racists step in for a final insult and our heroes take them out. And for me, like I guess I didn't quite understand it because like you were talking about with the joint being this almost utopian, beautiful night of like this community just getting to celebrate itself. the white evil people showing up at the end, I was sort of like, I think this movie has said so much about this group of oppressive people without showing them. And I've enjoyed that the movie has just been about these characters who are predominantly black and I guess like a coda of white dickheads, Klan members. Like it doesn't stack up. It isn't like an escalation or it didn't add something new to me.
Yeah. It also feels like a lesson. As you said, I think coda is the right word for a film that has an actual coda as well.
Yes.
After the credits. It's weird that it's quite a full on set piece that comes
it's consequential.
After such a bigger set piece.
Yeah.
It's more the idea of like a one man army. Like it's one of the twins against the Ku Klux Klan. But stakes wise, you emotionally aren't at the place of being heightened. You've sort of just been released.
Yeah.
So you're
I
sort
just
of just watching
it. Like what's happening now?
I did. Yeah. Yeah, I loved the visuals of the vampires. I loved the ideas they represented, but the siege thriller is messy to me.
Yeah.
And it's in a
I
way.
I think it's a messy, it's not a tight movie where you're like, damn, they don't make them like this anymore.
Yeah. I feel like every review largely falls on the line of like, to you, is the sincerity of it and the emotion of it and that like larger social ideas it reflects beautiful enough that it makes it this all-timer.
Yeah, and it's fun enough. It's a fun time.
Oh, I was entertained the whole time.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I just am like, oh, I will largely go like, oh, it was too messy for me to be like, it's an all-timer for me. But like it's more than anything, it is the sort of film that as opposed to the other film that we fucking saw on Minecraft movie, you watch, you watch out. While you're watching it, you're thinking about the larger context of what this film means.
Yeah.
For the people that made it, for the industry,
for
movies.
For a blockbuster that's out at the same time as a Minecraft movie, this is like a sensation.
It's the biggest phenomenon. It's the biggest opening of an original film since Nope.
Damn.
And
it's quite
beautiful.
Similar to Nope in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it is.
Interesting.
And I fucking love Nope. Like and that part of what the package that Ryan Coogler sold the movie on is this idea of black ownership, that he owns the rights to the film after 25 years.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, I was like,
did they think this movie was going to tank or something? Like they're idiots for accepting that deal.
Oh, totally. Well, equally just the like, I know that ownership isn't just about like having IP, but before watching it, I was like, he doesn't want this to be like a franchise or series,
but
does he?
But then the little mid-credit scene, you're like, no, there may be a sequel to
this. It's actually very much like, apparently next Ryan Coogler wants to do, he's doing an X-Files reboot. And I'm like, oh, you totally grew up on Buffy. Like you like the idea of seeing
sexy
characters, seeing sexy vampires through different eras. Like that's the best part of Buffy. Like you see them in Victorian England. You
that's
see them in
the
like
vampire as well.
Dynasties. You see them in 1970s punk scene underground London.
When we see the vampires fashion in this mid-credit scene, my whole cinema like laughed and thought it was really funny.
It's
pretty great.
It's amazing. The design is amazing.
So it's going to sequelize, you reckon it's going to?
I think he is embracing the idea that this is something that could like serve many many careers in front of and behind the camera in a way that I'm like, no, you earned that. And I think he still, well, again, they're not films for me, as in like I'm not their main audience, but they are amazing films. And they are films that, to me, like the way in which he infiltrates ideas into like big blockbuster filmmaking is so impressive. The like scene to scene function of things is still a bit clunky for me.
Yeah.
But it's such a huge net positive. It's such an entertaining film.
It really has its moments.
You have to go see it. And you have to go see it in a cinema. We both managed to see it in IMAX.
Yeah. And the IMAX, I think we both maybe have mixed feelings on changing formats.
It's the
what
first
did you make
time
of it in this movie?
It's the first time IMAX? I've thought about IMAX as a choice.
Yeah.
By which I mean,
as a good choice.
As a good choice. By which I mean, we are talking about aspect ratio changing in a film, which in some things is ridiculous. ridiculous. I don't know if it's a Nolan film or like a Mission Impossible film or something, but like
it can give you a headache sometimes.
The action like, scene.
Whoa, I wasn't prepared for this. Why is that happening? It doesn't feel intuitive.
Yes, but between four or five cuts, it will change back and forth from aspect ratios. Like the some things were shot on IMAX, some things were shot just in like whatever 70 mil, and it's just in the edit, cutting to the footage. Without taking into account that you're about to see bars appear and reappear and appear and reappear.
Crazy.
In this movie, I'll talk about my favorite IMAX moment that I was just like, you shot this knowing how you were going to cut it to emphasize the aspect ratio as a choice, which is when we are introduced to Jack O'Connell as a vampire for the first time, which is the previous thing has been in the ratio where we have the black bars on the top and the bottom. And then on the cut, it's a stunning wide shot of like an isolated cottage under the hot sun.
Yeah.
And Jack O'Connor is bloodied and he's sort of like
this vampire burning.
He like
in the
lands
sun.
On the dirt.
Yeah.
Like he's like jumping
from above.
From above, from top of frame. So on the cut, the frame expands and someone lands from the top of the frame. And you're like, you have just eased me into the idea of this as a bigger moment.
It surprised me. It feels natural. For me, it was some of the shots without people in them where it would be like after a...
Yeah.
Yeah, after a dialogue scene where it's like back and forth, shot, reverse shot, it then cuts to like a shot that fills the whole IMAX screen of like the moon or the sun or something. And it just felt like like it was indicating to you when to breathe and when to like feel that you're sitting in a seat watching a movie. It was so cool.
I think it's the most... intentional use that I've seen, but that also might be because he's a filmmaker that I like. Like, I don't really resonate with a Nolan, who I would say is the main like filmmaker
like
that utilizes
Nolan.
IMAX. I like Nolan. Did you see Oppenheimer in IMAX?
In IMAX, yeah. But I was sitting real up close. So when I came in, Cillian Murphy had like a big ass jaw and
big
scary
nostril.
Eyes. And I was like,
so this is the first time in about 5 years that I've been like, I have to make sure I see that in IMAX. And then I actually saw it in good IMAX seats.
Because you saw Dune in shitty IMAX seats.
Same thing, Dune. They should not sell the front three rows.
They shouldn't.
You just look up nostrils.
You just fuck up your neck.
But what I will say is, am I sold on IMAX now?
It's very expensive.
Look, I was three rows from the back and still that is such a big fucking image that you have to remind yourself to look down to look at the bottom of the frame. Like it's like looking up at a building. Like you can't take in the whole image in your eyeballs at once. You literally have to look around to see more of it.
It is a bit active. Like I'm surprised more people aren't like IMAX makes me feel sick. I don't like it.
Like I'm thinking about like if I'd seen Tenet in that or some shit. Like that you'd feel ill. It's too big. You can't see shit. There's too much to talk about in this film. Two things I want to talk about quickly before we...
Chicken and jockey.
Chicken and the jockey. They weren't in this film and that's why it's a worse one than Minecraft
movie.
But the score in this has a really impossible task and it's crazy. I actually would love your thoughts on it, Anthony. But it's a film about blues music. Of a very specific era. The film inherently is about genre hopping anyway. And, you know.
And like it has some crazy, like, 80s Fright Night, The Lost Boys, like, metal.
No, but that's what I mean. Like, it knows that when it goes horror, it goes full.
It goes
like electric guitar. Like, and then, like, once you've had that tracking shot that embraces the different cultures and stuff, even a lot of the more, like, traditionally like deep south, like blues, like music goes to these like really modern places. Mm. I just think it's like a weird, brave score. Secondly, who was your MVP in the cast? Because it's an amazing performances all around.
Do you have
but
one?
I have one. You go first.
I really, really like Jamie Lawson, who plays like the sexy girly that does that amazing song on
stage.
Yeah. I don't know if she's my favorite, but she's someone who like, she's in heaps of, she's not in so many movies actually. She's been in a bunch of movies and I always look her up and I'm like, damn, when's she going to be the main character in something? It's crazy. She's so like commanding. I think
you
she's
are
great.
Like fully drawn in by her.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a very sexy, like it's like a MTV VMAs, I don't know, performance. It's like gorgeous.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's a great pick. My, in everything
one
is
of the
in,
Michael B. Jordans.
Yes, truly. I liked him as the,
Stack
the red one more. Yeah. Is that the red one? Yeah, I liked him as Stack a lot. This actor is the best part of everything he's in to me. I love Delroy Lindo.
Yeah.
I just think he...
Like, he makes dialogue sound amazing. Like the script for this movie was good. It was like smart dialogue.
It was, yeah.
But whatever he says, you just like roll it around in your mind again. You're like, yeah, wow.
He just fills in a world so beautifully.
And he's funny.
There's this beautiful
monologue.
In a movie
that kind of needs some lightness and funniness.
He is, yeah. Fully, yeah. Very funny. Yeah. He fills in this moment early in the movie that's like... They're driving again, like it's just an opening with the boys. The twins are sort of recruiting people for the opening night, and they pick him up and they're driving him past the cotton fields. And he literally is
he just tells this like hideous anecdote about like brutal racial violence.
And it's like he tells the story, there's silence, and then he just starts sort of like humming to himself and like nodding his head and banging his head forward. And it's so guttural. Like yeah, that's the sort of thing that really you know. Good. I fucking hate any version of a you know, Instagram reel story that's like, did you know this moment was improvised? You're like,
there's no
that's
way.
What acting is. Like, what do you mean? He was living that thing and said that thing. Mm. I just mean it was one of those moments where I imagine someone being like, did you know this thing wasn't in the script?
Yeah, because it feels like that.
Because it feels like someone very obviously, because they're so good at acting, told a story that hurts so much. The other people in the car are just sitting in the pain of it. And that super intelligent, deeply human actor's instinct was to be like, when I tell those stories, what I think is like, we have each other, you know, like here we are in this car. Mm. Like he's sort of rousing them out of the moment through this sense of like being connected, which is what the movie's all about.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. Like it's
it's a nice little pocket
such connected
retelling of the movie.
Acting that I'm like, that's literally what that whole movie is about like,
yeah.
We have this constant connection to pain, but at least we have the shack right now. Like we have this bar right now, you know? Mm. I think it's a really good movie.
A way that this sounds like it's being rude to sinners, but a movie that sort of like came to mind as like a spiritual twin to this movie a bit to me.
Oh, I have one of that.
Oh, yeah.
I have one. Mm-hmm.
Was Babylon, the Damien Chazelle movie.
Oh, yeah.
I know. That
the jazz
got,
is better in this.
Yeah. I mean, this movie is better overall. Sinners is better than Babylon.
Mm.
But I feel like they both had a similar thing where when it came out, I was really annoying and sort of whinged and was like, meh, I wish you'd have done this instead of this or whatever. But then like the next day I was like, no, actually, I just really liked it and it really moved me. Mm. And in particular, the party scenes or the scenes where it's meant to be people having fun and the audience is brought along into it, listening to music, watching people move, feeling this like intoxicating vibe are like transcendent. Babylon does that really, really well. And
that
like,
is
you
really
can't argue with
funny
that.
To me.
Yeah.
I'm about to argue with you about that. Is that a thing we say about Babylon?
I thought that Babylon, the party scenes fucking ruled.
Wow.
They were fabulous.
I'm due a rewatch. That's not the moment I think about.
Now you sound like...
Now I sound like those people.
Guy.
I like Babylon.
The guy that said, maybe I'm due a rewatch.
Yes.
From Things.
That's how... That's
maybe I'm due a rewatch.
The director of Things that we talked about last week. That's how he talks about every film.
Oh my God.
Maybe I'm due a rewatch.
Yeah, maybe but you are due a Babylon rewatch.
I'm largely a Babylon defender. I think about a lot of moments from that movie all the time. I, on set, think... all the fucking time about that beautiful moment where Brad Pitt, it's his last day on set and it's like him just looking around at different crew guys like living their life.
Or what about the bit where Margot, really nice. Now we're talking about Babylon, when Margot Robbie, it's like about the difficulty of shooting for sound for the first time.
Yeah,
great. And it's like they do the same scene over and over and over. Babylon's good. It's a good movie.
Babylon is good when it's not about its characters. Babylon is good when
especially
it's
the main character.
Talking about ideas. Yeah. When it's about the sun going down and when it's about the sound
last
scene
cinema.
And when it's about the closing
and when it's
of everyone
Toby
in the
Maguire.
Cinema. When it's about Tobey Maguire, when it's about the interconnected stories of all those characters, it's like, ugh. Anyway, I actually could talk about that movie a lot more, but instead we have talked about the two best movies you could see at the theaters right now, which are Sinners and a Minecraft movie.
A Minecraft movie.
If you only had
the fare
well,
for
that's
one
a silly
ticket.
Question. I was going to say, if you only had enough for one ticket and you'd already seen Minecraft movie 2 times, would you go see Minecraft movie again or would you go see Sinners for the first time?
I guess I'd take a chance on Sinners.
Yeah. And you can always go see Minecraft movie tomorrow.
I can always walk out of Sinners if there hasn't been a chicken jockey in it and go find a cinema where Minecraft is screening.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Or you can pull out your phone, put the brightness up to its fullest and watch the chicken jockey scene on TikTok.
Yeah.
You've got that as well.
Chicken jockey. That's what I call TikTok now. Chicken jockey.
I wonder what the next Now Screaming will do.
Final Destination.
Look, Eliza and I have a deep, deep,
we have to figure out how we're going to do the Final Destination because we will talk about them on the podcast. It will be pretty soon and there is a new one coming out.
That is something for you to look forward to. There's no franchise we have a deeper love and connection to than the Final Destination franchise.
Then apart from Minecraft movie.
Oh, but yeah. Our newest favorite franchise. There's only one film in it so far, so it's a perfect franchise. We will be talking about Bloodlines at the new Final Destination at some point. So you've got that to look forward to. Other than that,
Blood, Vampire, Sinners in cinemas now.
I can't take it. But you should. You should go. It's really, really great. Yeah. And I would recommend seeing it in IMAX if you can.
Yeah, if you got the cash to splash, IMAX is very good.
It's really worth it.
Yeah.
Unless you have to sit in one of the front 3 rows, in which case you really should.
Go see it at a weird time. Go see it on like Tuesday night or something.
I went at 4:10 on a Wednesday and it was perfect.
Was it cinema busy?
It was the perfect amount. It was like 5 rows were full.
But when I saw it, I reckon every seat in the house was full, which was beautiful to see. Yeah.
Nice.
Everyone seeing Sinners.
I think at IMAX, everyone's spent enough money that they're not going to fuck up the experience. You know what I mean?
They're not going to chicken jockey. They're not going to chicken jockey. I mean, in IMAX, if you tried to throw something at the screen, it would be so pathetic because the screen's 3 stories high.
That's true. Also, I think they knew that if you saw a chicken jockey that big, you would spontaneously combust.
You would shit out all your organs, probably.
Thank you so much for listening to the Midnight Screening Podcast. You know that we love you. We love that you come back for more. Thank you for being here. Become a patron of the show and you can vote on our next iteration of the Slot Bucket. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Letterboxd, and you can check out all of our projects and all the other fun stuff we do, including keeping up to date with this podcast on our website, midnightscreeningproductions.com.
Yay.
Thanks, friends. We'll see you next time.
Remember to mind your step and mind your own business. Enter chicken. I'm so tired of it. I don't know why it's funny or anything. Like, I feel so old saying these words, chicken.
Can you read the definition again?
I don't have a definition. I have the captions that say, a chicken jockey is a rare occurrence when a baby zombie rides a chicken like a horse.
It's rare in the game? Does it not happen a lot?
It seems, I don't think it's an accurate caption. It doesn't make sense to me. It's a rare occurrence. Like, I don't think it's a game thing.
Someone
told me it's not something from the game. It's just a funny thing.
Like a meme or something.
That he says, oh, chicken jockey.
Oh, what? It has nothing to do with, it's
not
like a thing from the game.
I don't think a chicken jockey's in the game.
If you know the answer to this, do not tell me. I don't want to know.
Shut up and leave us alone.
Fuck off.
Bye.